Welcome back to the Psyche Behind the Physique. I'm your host, Maddie Michelson, IFBB Bikini Pro and founder of the Empowered Coaching Collective. On this podcast, I want to bring you conversations that bridge psychology, physiology, and real-life lessons in sport and health. My goal is to interview athletes, coaches, and everyday people who are doing extraordinary things so you can walk away feeling both educated and inspired to become the best version of yourself inside and out. Today's episode is one that I'm really excited for. I'm sitting down with my friend Corinne, a marathon runner that I met through Run Unlimited here in St. Pete, Florida. Run Unlimited is a gym that helps athletes train for races and challenges that involve running. And Corinne is not only one of the most dedicated runners that I know, but she's someone who's taught me so much about grit, preparation, and perspective. Her most recent marathon in Utah pushed her to her limits in ways she didn't expect, and it left her with lessons that go way beyond running. Just like bodybuilding preps or health journeys, this race showed her the importance of pacing yourself, staying present in tough moments, and remembering the bigger picture. So we'll get to it. Corinne, thank you so much for being here. I want to just take a second to say thank you for going to sweat this morning, flying by the seat of your pants from that workout straight into this podcast. Would you share a little bit with our listeners about your running journey and how you maybe got into running and then marathons from there?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be on this podcast. I'm so glad that running and just like the fitness community has brought us together. Running. I started running back in high school, and then I did do 2 years of collegiate running. One of my dreams was like I just wanted to be a collegiate athlete, so I started there. I did 2 years. To be honest, it wasn't the best experience. I was injured a lot. Running has a lot of injuries tied to it. If you talk to any pro runner, even any like runner like me, we've gone through some type of injury. So that was a struggle there. And then after college is when I found distance running. I did my first half marathon, and I think it was 2013. And to be honest, I was like pretty good at it. I like did my first race and I like ran a 145, which is like an 8 flat with like no training. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'm better at this distance than college. In college, you run 5K, which is 3.1 miles. So I think my body kind of liked the longer distance. So from there, I just started doing halves. And one of my friends came to one of my halves and she was like cheering me on. And at the end of the race, she's like, Corinne, you're like not even tired. And I'm like, what? I was like taken back. I'm like, what do you mean I'm not tired? Like, I just ran 13 miles. And she's like, I think you could run a full. And I'm like, there's no way. Like, in my mind, I'm like, absolutely not. Like, that would be like double what I just did. And so in 2016, 17, I ran my first full and I ran the exact time that I trained for. I was like, I'm gonna run a 4 hour marathon, which is 9 minute pace. And I literally ran 4:00, like to the second. I ran 4 hours. So that's kind of where I started my love for the marathon distance.
You know what's so cool about that is like I mean, not really in the context of running yet, but I can definitely relate to feeling like, so my whole life, and what I love about doing these podcasts is like you think you know somebody and then you do it and like you learn a whole nother side of them. But I tried every single sport under the sun. Like my mom had tried me in cheerleading, she tried me in soccer, I tried lacrosse, I did cross country, I did swim team for 3 days. Like I sucked at every single sport that I tried. And my like big sport growing up was ballet, like hardcore ballet. And then I segued into wakeboarding where I fractured my skull and I got in a bad accident. And then I
Oh my
segued
gosh.
into, segued into bodybuilding. And even then, like obviously I've been at the top of all of those sports, but it wasn't until truly like training for High Rocks that I was like, oh shit, like I'm actually good at this. And it comes easy, and it's cool when you have that kind of like aha moment where you're actually like if something comes very naturally to you. So at this point, first marathon being in 20 or half being in 2013, how many have you done?
So what's crazy is I don't know how many halves I've done because I haven't really like counted them. Because I used, but I have done seven. I just finished my seventh marathon. So
Wow.
the half, it's kind of crazy. Like once you do a marathon, it's like a half is just like not that big of a deal, which it is a big deal. But I just like,
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't actually counted because I usually do a half marathon as like a build for my marathon because I like the marathon better and I think my body has adapted a little bit better to the marathon than the half. So, but I probably
Sure.
should sit down and count one day.
Yeah, might be a good idea. You never know when you're going to be asked on a podcast again. So,
Yeah,
use
exactly.
this as your practice round. No, but what that tells me, is that you've had much like a bodybuilding. Like I always tell my athletes this, like with each and every prep that we do, or even as a lifestyle athlete, each and every fat loss phase that you do, things are going to get easier. Whether that's your coach understands your body better and you know kind of like how to peak your body properly or how to taper properly. We know what foods work best for your body on show day or race day or even in a fat loss phase. We know how, where your Achilles heel is in that reverse diet process or as you're deloading. So I know that for in this race in particular, like this Utah race for you, as you referenced for me, was a beast. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of the race, I want to talk with you a little bit and talk with our audience a little bit about the parallels between both bodybuilding and marathon training. Like I said, in bodybuilding, every single prep is different. And each show, it really teaches you when to start, what adjustments to make, how to manage expectations for the next one. Is it the same with running?
Yeah, I would say it's probably similar in terms of maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong on bodybuilding, is the structure, the foundation is usually the same. So like you have, your speed days one day a week, you gotta hit that long run once a week as well. But then in terms of like the prep, it is a little bit different depending on the race that you're doing. So like the race I did was at altitude. It had hills. I had to incorporate like stuff like that into my training. But I would say like the foundation, the structure of marathon training is usually the same. And then you can kind of like pick and choose depending on what kind of race you're doing.
Okay, so for you, yeah, I guess there is like a parallel. So like for bodybuilding, for example, like if I'm dealing with an athlete, I actually just did this with one of my athletes. Like the first prep that we did, she pretty much was home through her entire prep, or even like in a fat loss phase. If I'm cutting somebody who's home, it's a lot easier for me to cut them than maybe someone who's traveling every single weekend for work or has multiple family vacations planned. Likewise, if you have a bodybuilder that you throw on a stage in the background, like we know the background of the stage is red, I'm not going to put them in a red suit. They're going to be washed out on that stage. So the environment does matter. Same thing with like travel. If I'm having them travel to a really, really hot environment that's humid and maybe they're not used to that, we have to manage variables like hydration status and sodium and all of these things. So for running, it's less like probably detailed, but also in the context of like if you have altitude or if you're going to be in a muddy terrain or things like that, right?
Yeah, for sure. And that also brings me to a good point of like how important it is to have a coach. Like coaches need coaches, and I work with a pro coach. I've been working with him for like the past 5 years, and the reason why I like working with him is because he helps me adapt. So like you said, if I have a vacation coming up, he's like, all right, Corinne, like you're gonna need to do that long run on Thursday if you can't do it on Saturday, and he'll switch my whole schedule around. In terms of that, like I have a friend who works with a coach because she works like 12-hour night shifts, and like you need to be like it is possible to still do like a hard training cycle like that, but you kind of need someone to help guide you and like switch that schedule around, and like it could change per prep or whatever you have going on.
Yeah, you again brought up the perfect word there to kind of characterize that, which is adaptation. I have a lot of athletes that I work with that are shift workers. And I always say to them, like, adaptation matters a lot more than perfection. In the context of even training, like I said, as a lifestyle athlete or in a prep, this is not a hat that we need to wear as an athlete that's also juggling. Because yeah, you're a coach for now two different gyms, but you're also a, you're in a relationship. You work full time outside of coaching. And so to juggle something like that is, like I said, just a hat and a responsibility and kind of a burden that you don't need, especially when they can take the guesswork out of it for you. And like you mentioned, there's moments where we do have to pivot. If something comes up or duty calls, you've got a class that you get scheduled for and you can't do your long run, to be able to, have someone that you can go to in your corner and have them kind of orchestrate that pivot for you. So you're not trying to figure it out is important. You don't always get those perfect prep conditions either, but we can still prepare well by having the right guide. So as we kind of segue here, I want to talk as, your friend that was kind of watching you, not through the process, because it's funny when, for our audience and our listeners, when Corinne and I first became friends, she was actually, like, I would say, like, I was going to Corinne's classes at Run Unlimited, but it was when you'd invited me to go for a run with you and your friends on that, I think it was a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning, one of the two. And it was your last long run before your marathon. So going into this race in Utah, I remember Corinne and us, running and kind of just chit-chatting about what it was going to be like. And Corinne, who lives in Florida and is from Florida, was like, oh yeah, like, there's going to be hills and terrain. And like, I've been trying to train for it as much as I could. But if you know anything about landscape and geography, Florida's geography is very, very different from Utah's. So I remember on the day of the race, you had posted an Instagram story, which I guess technology is not your forte. That's okay. Corinne had stayed in the same spot the entire race. She left her phone at the Airbnb. I was trying to track her through the app, but I was just super excited for you, knowing, I had, like I said, talked to you right before that race, and just knowing what goes into prepping for not a marathon in great detail, but for a big feat like this. And so, when I had touched base with you, I think I sent you a message after the race, or yeah, I think it was just after the race, and it asked you what you were doing to celebrate or whatever. And I remember you being disappointed. Like, I even think that I saw an Instagram story of yours that had said something along the lines of, like, not the outcome or the performance that I had hoped for, but like more to come on this or something like that. And to be honest with you, when I saw that, I kind of like pawned it off as my previous experiences in the sport of bodybuilding, which is a losing sport. Like, it doesn't dilute the pain or the sting of falling short any less. But it's something where, like, you acknowledge it for your audience that's been supporting and watching you. You're like, yeah, I didn't do so hot, but it's really not, like, if you were to compare your performance to like anybody else's, you probably still did really well, And so that's kind of how I internalize it. I'm like, oh, it probably wasn't that big of a deal. Like, she probably got, like, not the best position, but like not the worst. We're our own harshest critics, basically. But fast forward to last week when we were at Run Unlimited and I was running beside you. And after just kind of like seeing you replicate for us what the elevation and the altitude was like, I realized that your placing and like even your experience with that was so much greater than just like not meeting your expectation for yourself. So let's kind of break down this Utah race. What was your what was your goal for this marathon going in?
So my goal for this marathon, which has been my goal for like probably probably about the past two races that I've done is to qualify for Boston. It's just like one of my big goals that I'm like, I'm gonna do it before I die kind of thing. And there's only two ways to get into Boston. You can either raise money for a charity or you qualify with your time. So it's the only race that doesn't have a lottery. Most races have like a lottery where you literally just like put your name and your email, and if you get in, it's all by chance. So this is the only one that doesn't have that. It's a very special race. It was like, I think it was like the first marathon ever, and the longest one or something. But anyways, so that's always been my goal. And not to go too far down a rabbit hole, but the qualifying time for it goes by your age and then your gender. So like female 18 to 34, which don't even get me started on that. I'm like, why am I going against 18-year-olds? But whatever. So the time was always 3:30, 3 hours and 30 minutes. And then which is an 8-minute pace. And then they lowered that time sometime last year, because the race got so competitive, they lowered it by 5 minutes, so 3:25, and you're like, okay, that's awesome, whatever. I was tr like changed my training to adapt to that time, and then we actually just found out yesterday, so this is a interesting timing for this podcast, that there was still a cutoff time. So what that means is they take, we'll just say 9,000 applications, but if But then they take the fastest out of that. So there was still a cutoff time because everyone is getting so fast. So you had to run 4 minutes and 34 seconds faster than a 3:25, which is pretty much a 3:20. So it's just crazy like how competitive it is. And like I did struggle with, I was training for the Toronto Marathon last year, and while I was training, they changed the time from 3:30 to 3:25, like not even a month out of my race. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, do I change? Like, I've already been training for 16 weeks. Like, do I change? Like, try to like do a ton of speed work right now, or like, what do I kind of do? And then I ran the Eugene Marathon this past April, and I ran a 3:26. So I was only 1 minute off of the 3:25 mark. So looping back to the Utah race, my goal for the Utah was very high. I was like, I'm gonna run a 3:20. And I was a little bit naive to the fact of like, yes, the altitude, the hills, it had a decent downhill portion the last 16. And I was like, everything else is fine. Like, I'm gonna make it up on the downhill. And that was not the case. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow. So I don't know that there's ever been anything like that, that particularly, or that happens in the context of bodybuilding. I know that there's been shows where basically you have to do like a you have to do a regional show and win your height class in the regional show or your open class. Which, by the way, to give you like an idea of this, open is very much the same. You have divisions like true novice, novice, masters, but any of those women in those categories can compete in the open. So in the open, it's just height based. So you could have an 18-year-old up against a 45-year-old. And it's a little bit different in bodybuilding in the context of like the 45-year-old might actually beat out the 18-year-old just because of muscle maturity, which is kind of the weird thing with that. But basically, once you win your open class, and this is kind of where there's a parallel, some shows, like previously it was top two in open that get qualified to go to nationals. Sometimes you get to the show and it's only the top girl in open. And so it's like, gosh. And then once you go to a national show, based on the different national shows, sometimes it's top three in the overall. Sometimes it's top two in each height class that get pro cards. So it's always kind of like, going in what girls can get a pro card, but it changes. And so that's kind of there is definitely a parallel there that I can relate to in the context of just like training. So, got it. We're going for a really competitive pace so we can qualify for this Boston marathon. You are in your head knowing, okay, I'm gonna be going downhill these last 16. I remember you talking about that first mile. Would you share with our audience that start of the race? How did that first mile go? And like, what were you looking around and seeing around you?
So that first mile was insane. It set the stage for the entire race, and it was at a 12.6% grade. And living in Florida, it's like even hard to even like fathom what that is. But especially you, Maddie, being at Run Unlimited and maybe taking a hills class or using the incline, those treads do go up to 22%. And 12 is like you're engaging your core so you don't fall back. Like it is pretty high up.
Yeah.
So,
For
and that's
any of
how it
our
started.
listeners, like I have athletes that I'll put on like 3% incline for walking and their hearts are getting up to like 135, 140. So
Yeah.
that is like what, four times that. So yeah, continue. What happened when you were looking around and what was
So
everybody else doing?
first of all, like I'll paint the picture. It's 6 a.m. We're on the top of a literal canyon. It's like 50 degrees. It's pitch black. There was like usually big races have like a gun start and it's like this big ordeal. This was not that. It was like this old guy saying like, "Okay, everybody go." And I'm like, "Where am I? Am I in an ultra marathon?" People were walking, which I have never seen at the beginning of a marathon. Like usually I'm doing like highly competitive marathons where like no one's walking up at the front. So that was insane. And just like to put some data to it, my first mile was 9 minutes and my goal was 7:38. So like I was like, oh my gosh, this is gonna be a long day. And like that's already like a lot that you have to make up. Yes, you have 26 miles, but like this is so early on in the race, you know what I mean? So I think
Yeah.
I really had in that moment, probably not in that first mile, but maybe like the second or third mile when it was still that steep. Like we were still doing like 8%, 9% grades, and then you would get the little bit of down. My legs just blew up, like completely blew up. And I think in that moment, I was like, you're gonna finish this race no matter what, because that's who the F you are. And if no matter what that time is, like I just running a marathon is 80% mental. Like I truly think that it is. It's really only 20% physical. You do the training and anything can happen on race day. Like you can have a perfect prep, a perfect training cycle, and you have a stomach issue that day. Like something that you can't control. Like, and for me, I couldn't really control this altitude and hills unless I moved myself to Utah for 20 weeks, which I couldn't do. So yeah, it was a rough beginning.
Yeah, brought up two very, very valuable things there. For one, well, you didn't really bring this up. You brought up the fact that you were looking around to other people and you saw them walking, and had never seen that before. And Corinne, if there's one thing that I know about you, it's that you are the farthest thing from judgmental. So I'm not saying that you were judging other people, but it makes me think of a very common parallel that I see as a coach coaching other women. I've had athletes that come to me that say like, "Oh, hey, I had another coach approach me at my last show, and they were interrogating me about my prep with you and how we got ready for the show, and they were kind of questioning your protocols." Or, "Hey, why is it that my friend, only had an 8 week prep and you're making me do a 16 week prep?" Or why is it that she was able to go into a fat loss phase, but I'm not ready for it yet? And I think so oftentimes, like, we put so much more energy into that comparison trap. Or maybe I don't want to use the word judgment because that references or alludes to the fact that you were judging those people that were walking, but you do kind of get in your head, right? And you're looking around like, "Wait, why are these people walking? I'm so used to running." When in reality, like, not to say that they were doing the smarter thing, but Someone else may be on a different path and headed towards the same direction and doing it differently than you. Like you are
Yep.
still all going towards the finish line. Their strategy to getting there was just different. They were pacing themselves differently. And it's not to say that one is better versus worse. In your case, it might have been a little bit better to actually walk the, you know, the first, but maybe not. The second thing that you had brought up, I had kind of lost my train of thought there, but it might come back to me. I think it was about it. Oh, about anything happening on the actual day and kind of like, you know, knowing that you did your best going into the race day. We always tell our athletes, like, don't leave any stone unturned in a prep. The best thing that you can do is show up on stage day or, you know, arrive at the end of your fat loss phase or your journey with a coach and go, I did everything that I possibly could. Everything that I could. And if you're an athlete like Corinne or myself, we or just human, honestly, we're really, really good at hyper fixating and almost magnifying our deficits. And how often do we also identify with our deficits as a shortcoming of our own? You know, it's like, oh, I didn't really, this didn't go as planned. It's because I didn't prepare well enough. And what I loved about your a recount of this start of the race was that you weren't actually, and this is probably something that your coach or you have learned over time, you didn't immediately resort to, oh crap, what things did I do wrong in preparation for this? You know, you knew, Corinne, that going into that race, you were in Florida, and that was an environmental barrier that it wasn't anything that you could have done differently to prepare better for. You ate well, you slept well, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that is like the biggest thing that really honestly got me through is that I had a great prep. Like, although it was Florida summer and it was so hot, I hit every single run. I had no injuries. I had no setbacks. Like my last prep, I got super sick. That was not the case this time. So I think that was almost like in my mind, I could settle with that. Hey, you did everything you could, and this was completely out of your control. And people say all the time, like, the marathon owes you nothing. And it's very true. Like, anything can happen. And I do, this is like so cheesy, but I do think there is some magic in like failing bad. And like I failed pretty bad. Like I mean, I was like almost an hour off of what I wanted. And like I learned so much. And I know people say that all the time, but like now that I'm 2 weeks post marathon, I can really see that a lot more clearly that like I feel like I can do anything now. Like I'm like, you, if you can do that, you can do anything. And I'm sure like your clients or you have also had that experience where like you just have that one really bad failure and you're like, I can do anything now.
Absolutely. And since the girl that you who almost stepped in to do a Hyrox a week later with no training. So yeah, let's put that to the test. No, you're absolutely right. I've definitely had that experience. You know, everything that you know, it's failing badly, yes, but then also you know, failing can also not good. I don't know what the opposite of badly would be, but like, you know, failing with strength and like failing with your integrity intact as well is something that can actually propel you in such a positive direction. Now, I remember you also talking when you were recounting this race about making up that time in the last 16 miles that were downhill. Will you kind of reference your or recount you trying to make up time and what that does as a runner, like even to your legs?
Yeah, so again, I think I just underestimated what my legs were going to feel like after doing hills for 9 straight miles. And then when I got about mile, end of mile 9 going into 10 is when the race went downhill. And I was trying to open up my stride, striving down that hill. And My quads were just like on fire. Like it was just crazy. Like they were already so gassed. And because, as I explained, the grades were so high up, now you're getting that exact grade, but down. So I was going like negative 10, which at Run Unlimited, our treadmills do go negative, but negative 3. So that was
Yeah.
very different that you weren't actually able, at least for me, open up my stride fully to go down. So I was bracing. And that's like the number one thing they tell you not to do is to brace because you're putting your entire body weight on those front quads and your glutes. But it was just a struggle. I'm like, I don't know how people are doing this because there's really no way to not do that or else you'll fall on your face. So yeah,
Well,
I
I
think
think
go
no,
ahead.
I think that that the word like blowing out my quads and like even like your method here, and I understand in those moments like sometimes you're thinking in your head like, gosh, there's nothing else that I can do here. I think that you probably did choose the right and appropriate course of action in that context. But I also think about the people that might have taken, I don't know if there is like a worse course of action that you could have taken, sprinting down it maybe, or whatever have you. But I always remind my athletes, like when you come back from a vacation, right, where maybe you didn't eat like you wanted to, or maybe you didn't have a chance to train as much, or maybe you had a few cocktails, or we get through the holiday season, which is like amongst us already, it's crazy. And on the back end of that, it's like, oh, I'm gonna cut carbs. I'm gonna go hardcore into, I'm gonna do 3 miles of running in the morning. I'm gonna do 15,000 steps a day. I'm gonna do strength training, at this gym or in these classes every single day. And it's like too much too soon. Like, don't go blowing out your quads. If you're trying to fix everything all at once, it's usually gonna backfire. I see the same thing too. I just brought on a new patient yesterday of mine who's struggling with like really, really bad with hormonal imbalances and gut issues. And I told her, she was like, I just want to go ahead and I just want to get all the tests done. Let's just run all the tests. Let's go ahead. And like, and I said, why don't we save your money? I said, I can already tell you what your test results are going to say if we test. I said, let's work together on the foundations for 3 or 4 months. Let's work on sleep. Let's work on stress management. Let's work on your nourishment practices. Let's have you step back from going to sweat every single day and running every single day on one meal a day. And then after we get through that, let's then test.
Absolutely.
And so fixing everything, like I said, at once, that's usually when things are going to backfire. So for our listeners, don't blow out your quads. Now, at what point in the race did you kind of realize that like 3:15 wasn't going to happen?
Honestly, very early, like probably mile four, like 30 minutes ish into that race, I was like, like I said before, I kind of just had to take a different mental stance on it and be like, you did everything you could. This is just not. Like, I can't even like describe through the phone right now how painful it was in the beginning. And it's something that was so foreign to my body to like literally feel like you ran 20 miles at mile four. Like, that is every marathoner's worst nightmare, not somewhere you want to be. And usually doesn't happen until at least like 16 to 20. So it was, I mean, that was just like a mental curve for me in itself. And I think what really got me to that finish line was just like all of the support in the community that I have. And even the people I had at that race, I had two really close girlfriends fly in from Oregon to come watch me. And then one of my really good friends from Florida flew with me. And like when I got to that finish line and I was bawling, they didn't care what my time was. And I think in that moment, I'm like, I just have such a special community and people that care about me as a person and not me as my marathon time. And like, even, and I was like so nervous to come back to Florida for everyone to be like, what was your time? No one asked me what my time was. Like, everyone was like, how was it? And like, I told them, you know, it wasn't my day. And like, if anyone is a runner or any athlete, they were. Understand like not having a good day, and like athletes probably have more bad days than good days, honestly. So yeah, I learned a lot.
When you were talking about it, as I was kind of like mulling over this podcast and our notes and things that I wanted to talk about, this was one of the areas where like I kind of struggled to like think about how I could how I could relate to any amount of failure. No, I'm kidding. No,
Jerk.
I kind of struggled to like, to draw that parallel. And as you were talking, it came so easily to me because in the context of bodybuilding, if you compete at a national or at a regional show, sometimes there's only four girls in your height class, especially if you're competing at like a show in the Midwest where bodybuilding is not as pre like prevalent and doesn't have as much of a presence, and you could win that whole damn show. And so you then qualify for a national show, and you're going into this national show thinking, I got this in the bag. I want an overall. You know, I never won an overall once before I went to a national stage. And then once I got to the national stage, it took me four tries, but I then won the entire show and got my pro card. It's the opposite though for, a lot of girls where it's like they go into that and they're thinking, I'm on cloud nine. I literally won my entire show. They get to the national stage. You don't know who shows up. There's all of a sudden there's 50 girls in your height class instead of four. And guess what? 40 of those 50 just also won overalls at all of their shows too. And so it's like, oh crap, right? And the crappy thing, and this is where I can really relate, is I will never forget, I did a national show in Teaneck, New Jersey, and show days start at like 3:30 or 4 in the morning, and they can easily go until midnight. And Teaneck, New Jersey, this show in particular was a long show, a long show. And prejudging for NPC Bikini, it starts at like 9 a.m. You typically don't walk on stage. We're the last division to go until like 12:31 p.m. So we got up at 3 a.m. for makeup. We finally step on stage at like 12:31. Finals didn't start until like 5 p.m. But at finals, it's really just a formality. I have been switched in terms of placing at finals, but you kind of know where you're going to be after prejudging. And I knew after prejudging, I wasn't getting that pro card. And ironically, one of my teammates, a girl that was on my team, was getting her pro card. And the coach that I was working with at that time, like, completely, like, just pushed me to the side. Like, I was a figment of his, like, I was just gone for the rest of,
Chopped
yeah,
liver.
exactly. So as I was crying as I got off the stage, I realized, crap, I have to see this through. I still have to go back up on stage at finals at 10 p.m. when I am exhausted. And watch my teammate accept a pro card when I had it. And it was so important for me in that moment to get through it, to realize that I had a choice. And I could either look around at my mom who flew there with me and the endless list of direct messages and the flowers that were put at flown in or driven in and sent to me by my friend from Florida that were at my hotel room door. And I could think about all the friends that were excited to celebrate me when they got back home and how I handled myself through that prep. I had COVID 2 weeks before. And I think so often, like, we forget the context, right? And not only that, but how often do you also start to romanticize context or maybe create false context? You know, like, oh, well, maybe I, like, in the context of bodybuilding, and this is going to sound stupid to you, it's like, crap, maybe those 3 nights out of my 4 month prep that I didn't get 8 hours of sleep, maybe that's why I didn't get this placing. No, it's not. No, it's not. You know, like think about all the things that you did do. You showed up for every single posing session. You hit every single macro. You never skipped a check-in. You never skipped a time trial run or a distance run, or, you know, you weren't going out and partying every weekend. And so it's like, don't forget, you know, that this one experience doesn't define you, but it can, right? And you gotta contextualize what's going on. I actually talked to Matt. I actually didn't share this with you. For our listeners, Matt is the guy that I'm my boyfriend. And we talked last night. He's like,
That is what a male partner is called. I'm just kidding.
well, last night I told him we're dating, and he's like, no, we're not. No, we're not. And I was like, yes, we are. A boyfriend is
Typical
someone you
men.
date. Yeah, he's like, no, dating is what we were doing. We're not doing that anymore. I was like, got it. I won't say that anymore. So I had to correct myself. But last week, you know, his grandma had came, had surgery, and he was taking care of her. His two kids were sick. He got sick. And I got a text from him this weekend. He's like, I went to church this weekend, and the message spoke to me, and I really dropped the ball. He's like, I've lost 10 pounds in 10 days. He's like, I haven't taken my creatine. I've been lazy. I haven't reordered it. And I said, whoa. Let's contextualize what's happened, right? Like, you haven't strength trained, so your muscle bellies are flat. You haven't taken creatine, so you have less, you know, water. Your cells are dehydrated. You haven't eaten as much. You haven't had an appetite, so your glycogen stores are empty. Like, you didn't lose 10 pounds. And I know that number is frustrating to see, but when he was able to zoom out, and again, the word here is contextualize everything, he was back up yesterday to 185. You know, it's like it's not what defines you. So moving on here, the finish line. You finished in 4 hours, was it right? 4 hours. I want to just take a second, because when I was listening to, you know, that in and of itself, even without any context, that is still a win. That is a huge win. And I know that your original goal was a 320.
Between 315 and 320.
320. You know, when you were looking around you, I remember when I was running beside you as you were telling me about the race, and you said even the winner had gotten, what was her pace?
I think it was like a 306, which sounds fast, but like for the winner of an entire race, like I can tell you like three, four women that I know that live in St. Pete that can run sub three. So
Yeah.
it's crazy that, it was that, I hate to say slow, but that was the winning time.
Yeah. And I think too, like, you know, this is one of those moments where we have to recognize that even sometimes the top athletes, like, look around at the other people's performance around you. And again, it's another way to kind of contextualize that number and to understand it. In the same context, like, I had a girl yesterday who really struggled with stepping up on the scale. And she's like, Maddie, like, I don't want to step on the scale anymore because that number means so much to me. And I said, hold on, you're stepping on the scale, and then you're contextualizing. Let's contextualize first before we analyze that number. So before you get on the scale, I want you to ask yourself, where am I at on my cycle? What time was my last meal last night? Did I go out to eat and have salt? Do I have something weighing heavily on my head or heart? Did I poop this morning? Like, how did I sleep last night? Did I hit legs yesterday? Did I go to the sauna? There's a lot of different factors that are going to help you to predict in your mind what that scale number might look like. Similarly, like, I could go drink alcohol and step on the scale the next day and actually be lighter. It's not a good thing, but context here is what matters. And then, you know, it's similar to stepping on stage and coming in second or third place. Like, others see success. Obviously, everybody else is going to tell you, like, wow, that's like an amazing placement. But internally, we're judging ourselves harder than anybody else. And I think sometimes just admitting that to yourself can lessen that sting.
Absolutely. And I think just like really remembering like the process, like especially with the marathon, and I would guess the same with like a prep is, like you said, there's so many ups and downs, and like you have to be obsessed with the process and not the outcome. Like the outcome, the race is like the fun part. The getting on that stage, that is, to show your efforts, but like being truly obsessed with like, yeah, maybe stepping on that scale and it's not what you see, or I'm gonna have a speed workout and it doesn't go the way I want, and then you have that grit to get back out there the next week and you bring it the next week. Like I just the in order to really be successful at the marathon, and I would think the same with prep, is like being obsessed with that whole process, even the downs of the process, the ups of that process. And then, being able to kind of figure out like how you're going to react in that moment if it's not exactly what you want in the end.
Yeah. Again, valuable point that you make, because I think we tie ourselves, and it is, tethering yourself to a goal is what gets you through the process, right? Like, I would not be sitting here right now on this Zoom with you with a pro card behind me if that wasn't my goal throughout my entire journey for venturing to get that pro card, right? Like, if you want to walk down the aisle a size two, that is your goal. That's what you're gonna go through a fat loss phase, and you're gonna stay adherent and consistent to get there. But let's also take a second to recognize that that pro card of mine that's sitting behind me, that sat unframed in the back of my closet for almost a calendar year before I finally got a frame for it and put it up on my wall. And that to me signifies like we don't actually value the thing. We don't value the medal or the placing. What we value is the person that we become in the process of getting it. And
100%.
I think it's so important. This is something, and I'm going to ask you how you do this for yourself. Maybe it's the same, but I am a big advocate. Every single morning, like I do a little bit of mindfulness and I just kind of brain dump. I'm not like a processor in terms of solving my problems via journaling, but I'll write a little blurb on my day or what I achieved yesterday or what I hope to achieve today. And in those moments, right, where maybe something does go as planned and it makes the process and the win all that much sweeter, or perhaps it doesn't, because more often than not, it doesn't. You have something like that, whether you revisit it or whether the act of simply just documenting on paper is what kind of solidifies all your hard work in your brain. I love doing that because at the end of a journey, it forces me to remember the process. And it puts me back in that position of really placing all the value and all of my worth in the journey as opposed to my worth in the outcome. So for you, like, how do you process that? How do you process, disappointment while still pushing forward? How do you balance being proud of finishing while also being your own harshest critic?
Yeah, I kind of like to give myself timelines. I think it is important to like feel the feeling in the moment. And so after that race, like my friends were there. It was great. I told them, I was like, I'm fine. But I kind of took a moment to be like, okay, for the next like 15 minutes or whatever it's going to be mad about that thing. And I tell people about that too. Let yourself be mad about it. If you want to cry, cry about it now. And then pull yourself out of it. Like, whatever you need to do to pull yourself out of it. If it's like going for a walk, talking to a friend on the phone, like, whatever. Like, I had my friends around me. So I remember we get in the car and we put on a good song. We went back to the Airbnb. We got dressed and we're like, all right, we're going out. And we drove straight to Salt Lake City. And like, that was just, I had my little moment right at the finish line where like, I cried, I hugged all of them, and I'm like, okay, like you're gonna move on. And if you have to do that again, you can do that again. Like when I got back to Florida, I knew that I was probably gonna have to give myself that moment again. And I went for a walk, I kind of reflected, I listened to one of the podcasts I really like, let myself, maybe feel a little bit sorry for myself in that moment. And then it is a choice to then pull yourself out of it. And it's like you're only hurting yourself by like living in that, oh, I didn't succeed, like reach my goal. I'm such a future thinker, and I'm like, all right, you live that moment. What are you gonna do to move yourself forward? Like you have, clients to teach, you have classes, like you have people that are also relying on your energy, and like they need to see an example of like how you pull yourself out. So I think that was a really big motivational factor for me too, is like it's not just about you. It's not just about you, Corinne. It's about everyone else. And what are you going to show to everyone else that's either trying to Boston qualify or even just trying to run 3 miles straight on a treadmill,
I love what you brought up there, because if you go down the path of, and I'm big on this as a coach, like when we're struggling with decisions or behavior, like allow yourself to walk down the path of what if, even if it's like an indulgence, right? Like, okay, go down that path, because sometimes you'll confirm for yourself that you actually do want that slice of pie and you're okay with the outcome. But go down the path of being a, pitiful for yourself and sorry for longer than you need to be. And what does that create? Well, it creates someone who's bitter about the sport, who regrets every single investment that they made, who minimizes and nullifies like the significance of their prep, maybe harbors resentment for their coach, and it's going to pull you farther and farther and farther away from the sport of being a marathon athlete and or a marathoner. And it's like, is that the outcome that you actually want? And if that's not the outcome you want, then you need to be aligning your mindset and your belief and your self-talks and the way you pick yourself back up with the outcome you do want, which is, no, I do at some point want to do another marathon. And I want to be a coach that's an example for others. And you have to ask yourself if the way that you're pulling yourself out of that hole aligns with that. So, for anyone listening to this, I think it's a good reminder of your mindset and its power to either make or break you. You can have a slow check-in, you can have a tough season, you can have a race that doesn't go as planned, but all of the work that you've done still counts, and the work that you're about to do is what can really pull you into the direction of and guide your mindset coming out of that. So, Corinne, now that Utah is behind you, what's next?
That's the million-dollar question. I am looking at doing another marathon in, I guess it's technically spring, late winter in March. I am going to control what I can control, which is staying on the East Coast. I'm looking at doing a race in possibly Virginia. It will still be cold there. Cooler weather, flat terrain, no altitude, and just kind of, give myself that chance to show up again and get back out there. So looking forward to that. Possibly maybe do like a half before that. I haven't fully decided, but I think it's important that like I get back out there, because part of me is like, eh, you could wait a year, like maybe give yourself that time. And I'm still so hungry for that goal. And I learned so much from this that I kind of want to keep that momentum going and start training again in the next month or so.
Cool. Well, speaking of learning so much, I mean, what I guess there's a lot of lessons obviously that this race taught you, but like, what's one that you are going to be taking into the next race?
I would just say that, again, anything can happen on race day, and just be prepared for anything. But just like pushing through, like having that grit to be like, you can do anything. This was probably the hardest race, hopefully, that you'll ever have to do. And like now you can like truly like come out and do anything. And like I think it was mainly a mental test more than a physical test. Like I said, I truly do believe like the marathon is just so mental, and I just played mental gymnastics that entire race. That is going to prepare me for any other race at mile 20. It's really going to help me get through that.
Yeah, I love it. At Run Unlimited, they always, I hate this, but they make us run at a 1% incline. And they say that it simulates like running outside, but Caleb
Yeah.
always says, he's always like, you're gonna appreciate this on High Rocks Day because it's flat and you're gonna appreciate having ran on a 1%. He's probably right.
Yeah.
So last question for you, Corinne, and then I'll stop interrogating you. But what advice would you give a newer athlete that's facing a setback?
Trust the process. Trust the process. Trust the process. Like my coach tells me that all the time. And it's like, trust that training. Like, I love the saying, like, keep stacking bricks, because that's literally what it is. Like, you're just stacking, 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 and you can have something that, like, doesn't go your way, or a run that maybe doesn't go your way, and you just keep stacking on that. And like, consistency is gonna be key. Being super consistent, like, probably the same with prep. You have like a bad day, or you go on vacation or something, and you just get right back into it like that was nothing. So being consistent is huge. Working with a coach if you can, going to a gym, surrounding yourself with like-minded community of people that truly care about you
Oh, yeah.
will literally get you through anything. So
Yeah.
like, yeah, if you don't have the means to join a gym, just maybe finding even a friend that can cheer you on. Like, it can be something as small as that.
I literally just did my last podcast on the importance of finding community and how to. So fitting for a plug. But I love your analogy of stacking bricks and consistency, because if you picture that analogy, right, it's like you could be building a house out of bricks. And if you're building a whole wall, if one brick falls as you're building the wall, in the grand scheme of things, like it's one brick. Like, is it going to, if is one brick falling out of the wall going to make that like creation of yours no longer look like a house or a wall? No, you can still tell that it's a wall. You can still tell that it's a house. What's important is that you repair the brick, right? You pivot, you course correct, you take the lesson from it, or you keep stacking on top of that, because one falling off is not the big issue there. So in terms of finding community or taking classes or finding a coach, I highly recommend Corinne. If you're in the St. Pete area, she coaches at Run Unlimited. Can I also tell them where else you coach?
Yes. So, do you want me to do it, or you want to do it?
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Okay. So super exciting. A brand new gym is opening on, if you're in the area, Central and MLK. It's called Peach Pump. It's going to be a women's only gym focusing on glutes, hamstrings, and quads, which after doing a race like this, they definitely cross. Like, it is so important to have really strong glutes, especially as women, because of the way our hips sit. We're very quad heavy. So, especially when we run, or even when we just walk. So, having like really strong glutes and really strong hamstrings is really important. It's supposed to have like this elevated feel at the gym, really just be a safe space for women to come and just work out, celebrate each other. It's a beautiful space. So, highly recommend. Don't have an open date yet exactly. Hoping in like the next 2 weeks. So probably like the beginning of October.
Okay. Well, listeners, you can go check Corinne out and see for yourself what an amazing coach she is at either Run Unlimited or the Booty Gym. Corinne, thank you so much for sharing your story so openly. What I love about this conversation is that it shows us that success isn't about everything going perfectly, but it's about showing up, learning, and growing stronger for the next time. If you're listening, and again, you're in the St. Pete area, go take one of Corinne's classes at Run Unlimited or the Booty Gym. I'll link her Instagram in the show notes so you can follow and support her journey. If you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe to the Psyche Behind the Physique, leave us a review, and come hang out with me on Instagram at Mads Michi Fitness and tell me what you'd love to hear next. If you're ready to take on your own health and physique goals or take them to the next level, you can apply to work one-on-one with us at empoweredcoachingcollective.com. That's the letter M, the word powered, coachingcollective.com, or through the link in the show notes. And as always, remember to be kind to one another and don't forget to include yourself in the mix. I'll see you next time.